spice is really good.
I'm digging it.
So what you put in this? How did you put it?
I like white asparagus. I like it.
It's shaved asparagus?
Uh-huh. It's just use it.
Does that mean it was hairy before you started?
Are we on?
We are on, baby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Clatch.
This is KVSH LP Vashon, and yes, welcome to the Clatch.
Hi, everybody. Gosh, it's been a long time since we've been here. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I am sitting here with
Susan McCabe
and Heidi Skrypek. Hello.
Hi, everybody. Gosh, it's been 3 weeks since we've been here.
Oh, my God.
I kind of went through radio studio withdrawal, I think.
True.
Yeah, we had a five-week month.
I know, yeah, that kind of screwed us up, didn't it? And we have to count ahead now, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's second and fourth.
We're here the second and fourth Tuesdays.
Because yes, that's right.
I had it
no
in
matter
mind.
How many weeks there are in the month.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because I thought it was every other, and then that didn't work last week. So anyway, we're back at the Clatch.
Hello, everybody. We're happy to be here.
Yes, we're very happy to be here. We've got a lot of catching up to do today. And one of the things we wanted to talk about was, how's it going in the COVID review? How's everybody?
Vaccinated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of feels like we're at a stalling point in a way. You know, everything feels better, but it's really not right now.
Right.
It's really not.
Yeah.
I looked at the New York Times this morning, and King County is very high risk now. For a few days, it was high risk. Now it's very high risk.
Very high. Well, Pierce right next door.
Yeah.
Rolling back to phase two.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I think on Vashon, we're up to 112 cases now.
Oh,
up four from last week.
Hello. I mean, look across the street.
I know.
They're jamming, man.
They're having fun. Lots and lots of fun. So.
There's not a lot of parking in town. There's a ton of traffic. A
lot of tourists. And it's Tuesday.
And
right?
It's Tuesday.
Not a weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel as though globally we're kind of holding our breath.
Yeah.
To see what happens next with the variants and the various vaccines. Mm-hmm. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is on pause in the U.S. right now. Right.
AstraZeneca internationally because of the clotting. So both those have these sort of clotting.
Blood clot things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So I guess the bottom line is be careful. Stay safe.
Keep
wear
masking.
Mask up, people.
Yep. Keep
I
doing
think we
it.
All are pretty much, but.
Yeah.
I mean,
somebody
those of us
out there
we know,
isn't. Yeah.
Somebody out there isn't. That's right. That's
it's just
right.
amazing, though, wearing that mask since last year out in public places, have not had a cold, no
I know.
Flu,
right.
no nothing.
No strep.
No.
I read an article the other day. There is no flu this year. And someone told me there's no strep around.
Can you imagine?
Because people are washing their hands and not breathing on each other.
And
you know?
The mask is just incredible.
It is.
That's a win.
Yeah, it is. I'm in the mood for a new mask, though. Now I think I'm going to probably wear them a lot. I mean, I wear it all the time anyway, but I think permanently when I go where there are big crowds. And I've just learned a lot about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea no matter what.
I do too. So everybody's good. I'm glad to know that.
Yeah.
Stay safe, Vashon.
And I think people are learning some personal lessons, and I hope that stays with them. I just talked with a young man today who lost his job and had to stay home, homeschool his kids, and is spending the time doing some personal work to see what about his own personality has gotten in his own way in his life. And he's really, I've heard that from other people as well.
I read another article, surprise, surprise, about two women. It's in the Atlantic this month. And it's about two women who've been friends. They were friends when they were little. And then they lost track of each other. And then they were friends again in college. And then they lost track again. And now they found each other. For years ago, they found each other again. They're in their late 60s.
Oh, man.
But they were planning on seeing each other during the COVID time. They live in different places and they couldn't get together. And they're neither one of them are writers, but they both, for some reason, fell in love with haiku.
Ah.
And they've been sending each other a haiku every day.
And every day?
Every day. And it's their way of staying in touch. And one of the women said, it doesn't really tell me a lot about her daily life, but it lets me know what she's thinking about and what she's feeling right now.
Man.
And then I have another friend named Karen who has two daughters and they're adult daughters, and her daughters and she have this thing they call Dayvent, and they patterned it after the Advent calendar. And so their Dayvent, it's like an event, the event of the day.
Oh, cute.
And they send each other pictures every single day. This is my Dayvent. Sometimes it's a sunrise.
Oh,
sometimes
nice.
It's a bird. Sometimes it's a kid.
Awesome.
And, you know, there's no, they don't need to talk or anything, but it's just thinking about you and here's where I am right now. So there are so many different ways we can keep in touch without touching.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
that. And I think we've decided that's really important.
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking for ways.
Very
and
important.
People are inventing ways.
Yeah.
And that's kind of thrilling to me.
It is to me, too. Yeah. Anything else on COVID? Anybody got any?
No, you intrigued me with a haiku.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Because there's some haiku stuff coming up in a little while.
Fantastic.
This is kind of personal on my part, but I wanted to do a little follow-up about our boob show.
Sure.
We had a lot of really good response on the boob show. You know, everybody loves boobs. And we three, I think, talked a lot about our nursing days and when we were such proud mothers and how good that felt.
Yes.
And we left out a pretty significant force in our women's lives in that there were many women who didn't nurse for whatever reasons they chose not to.
Yes.
And I have a friend who told me that she would just like me to mention that because she said, when we were talking about how proud we were and what a great feeling it was and how nursing is the only way that you can, you know, antibodies and all the things that we love about nursing babies.
Sure.
And she said she felt left out.
Aww.
And she said she also endured shaming.
Wow.
From nursing mothers when she wasn't nursing.
Mm.
And wow.
Wow is right.
I know.
That's awful.
That is not sisterhood.
That is not sisterhood. No. And I know this woman, and I know that she held those babies and nursed them, you know, with a bottle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's
not like you just lay the baby down and prop it up with a pillow, you know.
Yeah, Here's a question.
What?
Were you nursed? I mean, did you nurse? See, I didn't either.
No.
I was a formula baby 100%.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I think my mother nursed me, but I honestly don't remember.
Oh, I mean, you wouldn't. I mean,
that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
But those
ago.
Conversations sometimes come up when you're pregnant, you know, and then you figure that out.
Right.
Because, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. So the other thing I want to talk about, and then I'll let you have the floor. Okay. But.
Oh, yeah. Right.
As if.
You guys are always griping at me about not bringing any food.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't bake anything today, but I brought springtime in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like you to try this. It's a shaved asparagus salad, and it's the easiest thing you could ever make in your life. You just use your carrot peeler and shave the broccoli, and then you make
a
dressing.
You mean the asparagus?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I get my greens mixed up.
You said broccoli?
I said broccoli.
You just blew my mind. All right, I'm going to make crunchy noises.
Okay, do that.
It's going to be ASMR. Just kidding.
Nasty. I hate
ASMR.
AMSR.
ASMR, whatever it is. It's sounds of people doing stuff. Mm. But anyway.
Wow, this is good.
Do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
It's different, isn't it?
You think it has Parmesan in it?
It has a lot of Parmesan in it. Mm. It's a easiest thing. Shave the asparagus, put it in a pile, add about maybe, it's a pound of asparagus. Add about 3/4 cup of grated Parmesan.
What's good?
Lemon juice, tiny bit of warm water to kind of gooey up the Parmesan, and salt and pepper, and that's it.
No oil?
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Olive oil.
So asparagus pee, it's real.
Yeah, it is real. It's the real thing.
100% of people pee asparagus smelling pee, but only 60% can smell it due to genetics. Just the way our code is.
Everybody
is that like curling
pees
your tongue?
Everybody pees smelly asparagus pee. It's a fact. A Harvard study did some research. I don't know what else they have to do with their time. You know, coronavirus.
You know, some of these studies are, But let's check out asparagus pee.
That's good. That's almost as good as the sex life of frogs.
Right?
You know?
I don't know. Another pee, and I don't know if they've done a study on this, but what I do know is that when you eat beets...
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's very important to remember the next morning that you ate
beets
last night.
Or you get scared.
Otherwise, you have that that horror, that morning horror on the first
red velvet poo.
Yeah. Or pee.
Call 911, call 911.
Oh my God, I'm bleeding.
Yeah, right.
It totally,
I have cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, you ate beets. Good for
right.
you.
Oh yeah,
you
right.
You scrubbed your colon, baby. Yeah, and this right. is fantastic. This is actually a super high source of glutathione. It's a cancer anticarcinogen.
Oh, really?
In it's asparagus. One of the highest vegetables that you can get that from. Folate. Vitamins A and C. It's so good for you. It's
I knew about A and C. Yeah,
no cholesterol, really obviously.
Yeah,
it's so good for you. And this is the season for Washington asparagus, April, May, and June.
Washington asparagus is not quite here yet. I checked at the store.
It's starting to ship.
Is it? Yep. Oh, good, good, yep. good.
Look for the blue rubber band. Snap that puppy and buy them up.
Oh, the blue rubber band indicates Washington?
Washington on it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if it comes from Arkansas, it's going to be another color?
It won't.
It'll sound like this.
Oh, but. There you go. It has an accent.
A little accent.
Honey,
yeah.
bless your heart.
Right. That's
bless your little heart.
Affordable asparagus is always my first sign of spring.
Oh, then it's not local, probably. You know. Yeah.
Well, you think. Okay.
Most of it's Peru and China. I mean, we have year-round asparagus, but Mexico. This is the time for, exactly, yeah. this is the time yeah. for a local.
So. Oh, and local, is you just can't beat it. It's just so good. Fresh. Well, I'm glad you liked
it's it. It's fantastic.
And it's delicious.
It's easy to make. And the only caution I would give you is that it needs, if you're going to serve it as a side dish, it needs a strong partner.
Something charred from the grill.
The grill. Grill would be really good.
Yeah. yeah. It's got some nice, grippy... I think of it as grippy tannin, sort mm-hmm. of like in a wine. It has an astringency to it, and it's not the lemon, it's the asparagus. There's something, you know,
there's
fibrous
in it,
yeah. in it that kind of grabs yeah. your mouth. But yeah. I could see it being a good fat cutter, something kind of mm-hmm. fat and charred, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. that with it would be yeah. beautiful. That's awesome. I love it.
Okay, good. I'm
Thank
glad you.
You
like it. You're welcome.
Yeah. Recipes with Linda.
So yesterday,
yeah,
I was listening to the radio. You know, we've talked about pet peeves a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to the radio yesterday, and I heard a whole bunch of mine.
Okay, but let's preface this conversation with the fact that all three of us are writers.
Thank you.
And grammarians.
Yeah, okay.
So pet peeves kind of might be more peevish to us than to others.
That's true. We're really over it, but we just have fun talking about it because yeah. it does. There are these little bristly things that happen to us when
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Well, and for me, part of the fun is getting together with writers and talking about
yeah
you know, because we are fussy.
Let it rip, baby.
The word matters. Well, what I heard yesterday was that it's 2021, and
say it again.
2021.
Okay.
20 and
with two N's and a Y.
Spell the word. Spell the word. TWENTY.
Correct.
20. Now, I had a conversation with my kids about it because I've always been about 20. TWUNY. 20.
It's not funny. It's 20.
So anyway, my granddaughter says, oh, so I'm supposed to say 2021? Not really, but you can say 20. You don't have to say the T, I guess. But anyway, it's just a lazy tongue thing. It's a 2020. Yeah. And then the other one I heard was they were talking about whether or not they would be able to go to a final destination of some sort. But what they said, and I hear it over and over, is they'd be able to. Are you going to be able to go? Are you able to?
That sounds like a colloquialism to me.
Be able to.
Just listen, you'll hear it all the time.
I pity the German speaker that learns American
yeah,
English
yeah,
or anybody yeah. that's learning American English and they hear that,
mm-hmm.
they're lost.
Yeah, they go, what?
Oh,
man.
What? What is that? Yeah, because people say it as one word. Be able to. You might be able to make that with a green corn, you know? I mean,
wow.
You might be able to.
You know what I find myself doing as a writer? I read lots of online news feeds and mm-hmm. Essays, and I find myself editing everything.
I do too.
What one of my biggest bugs is these people don't have proofreaders because all the little words are gone. of
articles.
And articles are gone because they're typing really fast and nobody's proofing this stuff.
Yeah,
I find that really irritating because the meaning can be easily lost. When you don't have, you have to fill in the, it's almost as though their brains are filling in the blanks and the, they expect the reader's brain to fill in the blank.
Well, that's another subject too, is the meaning of words that people get screwed up, you know, like farther and further.
No, that's one that bugs me.
Well, farther is a distance, right?
Correct.
Right. And further is intangible.
Is going on, yes.
I'm going on, I'll take this further.
I'll take, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not—it's not a physical distance. It's more a nominal.
Yeah,
that's not right.
Well,
yeah, it's
now
conceptual.
I'm editing my conversation. Yeah,
And as in truth here, we have been talking about one of our most unfavorite words, irregardless.
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 And it's in the Oxford Dictionary
because illiterate people screwed us. They
at
just
the Oxford-
started repeating it over and over
it's
and over
terrible.
Until it got adopted in. And I suppose that's how a lot of words get adopted into the dictionary. But that one is just no, please.
Well,
regardless.
The dictionary does classify it as non-standard English. So it's still a word, but it's non-standard.
But then does that mean on Words with Friends, you can stick an IR in front of regardless if that word is lucky enough to get on the thing? And that will be ring accepted by Words with Friends.
Well, irregardless of what we think.
Oh, I hate
it's
you.
In the
dictionary. Stop it right now. I'm coming over there and I'm going to hit you with a microphone.
I think sometimes it's hard to accept that we are speaking a living language.
Thank you. You're right.
And there are new words added all the time. Not that I can think of any at the moment.
What I don't like are old words that have been, they've been kidnapped and hijacked. Okay, here's one that really bothers me because I do a lot of retail copywriting. Okay, originally this word, gift. The verb gifted.
Oh, yeah.
Gifting season. Macy's gifting season for the holidays.
Or you gifted.
Giving.
I gifted it.
You're giving a gift. Gifting, historically, is for estates and trusts. It is not for giving a gift. It's specifically for inheritance, and it's tax law, and that's gifting. Please, if you really care, the rookies from the pros, baby, it's giving a gift. It's not gifting. Please.
You know, and that's another one. Those nouns that have been turned into, have been verbified.
Absolutely. There's like, one right there.
Like party.
Party.
I'm going to go party.
Yeah.
No, you're going to a party.
Mm-hmm.
True. You're attending a party.
Yeah, but now I'm going to party, which usually means I'm going to get wasted somehow.
That's
what about
true.
Grow the business?
Grow the business.
You grow a tree.
I like that.
I don't mind growing the business.
Growing the business.
That sounds positive to me. That sounds somewhat uplifting.
Okay.
Especially, just kidding. Oh. Just kidding.
Especially, that's a good one.
Especially, yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's a few of those. Over and more than. Over is directional. More than is quantity.
Over the fence.
I made more than $1 million. Just kidding. I wish
yesterday.
I did.
Would you be here if you did?
I threw a rock over the fence.
I have another one.
Go.
Luxury. L-U-X-U-R-Y. Luxury.
Oh, the phonetics of pronunciation.
I hear that on television a lot. It's usually a car guy that says it. Luxury.
It says
it's luxurious. There's no G luxurious. In luxury.
That's true.
Lug.
You know, it's the one that really gets to me, and it always makes me think of George W. Bush.
What?
Nuclear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nuclear.
Nuclear.
It's nuclear, folks.
Nuclear.
Why
Look
is that
at Iran.
Hard to say?
They know how to say it in Iran.
Well, that they do. And then, of course, there's sherbet.
Sherbet.
Sherbert.
Oh, sherbert.
Mm-hmm. There's no Bert in sher. So, anybody else got more words?
So have we relieved all our peeves?
Oh, not quite. But
no. Never.
We probably spent enough time talking about it.
Really quick, we want to say thank you to our supporters.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support. making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island, on the web at thsrestaurant.com.
Where were we, darling?
Hello again.
I'm sorry, what? I can't help but think athletic supporters when you say our supporters.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Athletic supporters.
Underwriters. Underwriters.
Totally.
Uh-oh.
Ein
we can have some fun with that.
Yeah. Under wires. Just kidding. we're on the supporter track.
Oh, back to the boobs is where we are.
We never
it's always
the
about the boobs.
That's right.
Okay. So it's National Poetry Month. Did
yeah.
you know that?
Yeah.
It's National Poetry Month.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, I thought maybe we'd focus on one of our favorite places, Mukai Gardens.
Yay. Yes.
Farm and Gardens.
Mukai Farm and
Gardens. Or Farm and Gardens.
Farden
Gardens.
That Mukai place.
So how do we want to start this? Let's see.
Well, they're having a haiku festival.
They're having a haiku festival that is in progress right now.
Yay.
It started, I think, the 24th of April, and it runs through...
No, I think it runs... This is the 13th
I mean, March.
Of April.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm so confused.
March. Thank you for that. And it ends, I think, the 5th of May.
Yes.
And on May 8th, Mukai Gardens is having... I wish I knew how to pronounce the name. Do you know how to say Nobunichi?
I think you just said it.
Did I say it? I don't know. But it's a Japanese word that means flea market. And so,
cool. That's cool.
Yeah. And as a fundraiser, they're going to have a Japanese flea market. And people on Vashon are opening their closets with their Pan-Asian collectibles. So that will be there the day before Mother's Day.
Oh, interesting.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about their haiku festival.
Awesome.
People are already entering. You can enter online at mukaifarmandgarden.org. And you can read some haikus, you can see some haikus. And should we read a couple of them that were submitted?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Who are the authors? Do we have their names?
I have their names. Yeah. Well, one I really love. First, I should explain. Kuni is the Japanese woman who lived there a long time ago, and she designed the gardens.
Kuni Mukai.
Yes, Kuni Mukai. And she designed the gardens, which then fell into disrepair for a long time and are now being restored according to their original design and structure. And Susan, I know you know a lot about the history of Mukai, and mm-hmm. we can talk about that. First, I'd like to read this from our dear Richard Rogers.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He writes, "Cherry trees in bloom. Each spring, Kuni smiles again, her eternal gift."
Oh, that is beautiful.
Isn't that just...
Yeah. It's so perfect.
Oh, and it's about her and her garden.
It's awesome.
And then... here's one from Britt Myers.
Okay.
"In the night garden, the moon shows me the place where fish feed on starlight."
Oh,
I love that.
Oh, I know.
I suck at haiku listening to these.
I know. I wrote
so
some
bad.
Haiku, and I think I'm just going to tear them up and throw them away now.
So here's Sadie Reisinger. And all it says is she's a young poet. "Coyotes are calling. The moon's bold light is shining down on the tree frogs."
Ah. So I want to let, if there are any people out there who don't know
yes.
how haiku works,
yes.
there is a structure to it.
It is.
And the structure is three lines. The first is five syllables. The second is seven syllables. And the third is five syllables. And when
depending
Linda was,
on where you read.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
yeah.
these are one, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Yeah, these are not that.
So they break them. They're broken up differently.
They're broken up in different lines. And uh-huh. the ones that I read, it said 353.
I know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's 575 and
that's
353.
Oh, interesting.
I've seen both in terms of the structure.
Ah, yeah. And so what is this festival taking both those structures? Or are they recommending 575?
"Cherry trees in bloom."
Yeah.
Five seven five.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I wrote 353.
Oh.
Well, that might be interesting. Yeah, I'd like to see how that turns out.
Bring it.
So this is now Linda Nygaard's haiku.
I didn't bring them.
Oh, how convenient.
You didn't bring them?
She lies.
Really? I thought you were reading them to me.
I'm looking at this smile. She's so full of beans.
Oh, man. Okay. More. And remember, this is 353.
Okay.
Morning dew sparkles on pink bloom, the prism of spring.
Yeah.
How about moss dangles on cedar tree bough, absorbing spring rain?
Oh, yeah.
These are 353. Great. Okay. I should be counting.
Oh, the last one doesn't fit.
Get the clicker.
Hidden path beside full river holds frog song in spring.
Ooh.
Frog song.
Frog song.
I wrote a couple, but I'm
yeah,
okay,
read them.
I did 575.
I know.
And all right.
Yeah.
So this is spider in my sink. Looks like she may be resting till the water runs.
Oh, did I do that?
Oh, so sorry.
And here's another one. Her body is old, stone deaf and scruffy fur coat, but Lucy still struts.
Aww.
Yeah, I got one of those.
Yeah.
What have you got?
Out of K, lucky. I have a lucky. Who is that?
Oh, who? A dog.
Oh, mine's a cat, but
oh, yours
same.
Is a cat.
She struts.
She struts.
She's crumbling and all that. Right. I really get that.
Yes. Oh, this is one. Most haiku is about nature.
Right.
So I was trying to go away from nature, but I didn't do too well.
You are so contrary, Susan, always.
Well, you know, I thought I was trying to be funny, but I failed there. Smell the winter rot. Bulb spears poke out from black dirt. Death breeds life again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good.
That's nature.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the other day I was walking early in the morning and I saw fawns just romping, romping in the field. So dawn catches fawn play. Each prance is like a goat kid. Spring moves their small hooves.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's yeah. it.
Those are awesome.
Thank you.
So I thought it was really interesting to come across that article about the women exchanging haikus for a whole year.
You know?
What an idea. What an idea.
So
it's a great way to kind of condense a feeling or an observation or a thought.
Right.
And it isn't that hard, folks. So submit your haikus to the contest. Do we know what you'll win? Eternal gratitude.
Eternal gratitude, probably. I don't know. That's a good question. I wasn't thinking of winnings.
True. Very good point.
You know, we should probably do a little bit of Mukai history because I don't know that everybody knows.
Well, I can, let me try to do this quickly. I can say every other word.
Well, Mukai,
do it in haiku, just kidding.
Yeah, do it in haiku. Yeah, let me do that real quick. Mukai Farm and Gardens was started in 1906. Yeah, it was actually... But it was leased because Japanese could not own property.
Own property.
So in 1926, the Mukai family purchased it in their son Masa Mukai's name.
Right.
So they could actually own property. And they became very successful entrepreneurs who invented a process for processing strawberries using sugar and strawberries and kind of creating a way to store it and then they sent it off to Seattle where they were freezing things, and they became very successful entrepreneurs and huge contributors to the economy of Vashon Island. In fact, they kind of got Vashon through the depression because they were hiring people to process to pick and process strawberries, and there were a number of strawberry growers, many of Japanese descent,
right,
who were
here,
also on the island. And then in 1942,
good old internment.
The internment happened, yes. And an entire community of people on our island were swept away in a day.
They were.
Gone, disappeared. The Mukais, however, who were very wealthy from their work, got a lead on what was coming, and they self-evacuated to Idaho, where they were not interning Japanese people.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, I thought they went to Oregon.
Idaho.
I mean, Idaho, okay.
Oh, the family themselves, yeah.
The family themselves went to Idaho. And I wasn't aware that it was all coastal internment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It didn't even go to the east side of Washington.
No.
They did not intern Japanese on the east side of Washington. It was just all along the coast, the west coast. I guess because they were concerned about enemy...
Recognizance and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Reconnaissance, sorry.
Or recognizance.
That too.
Like bombs.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And then the farm fell into disrepair for a long, long time, and it's now being restored. And the gardens are being patterned after Cooney and what she did and her vision. And I looked at some history of Mukai, and when you look at the old pictures from the 30s, and then you see what they've done now, it's amazing how they've rebuilt. And listeners out there haven't been to Mukai Gardens, you need to go. It's the most peaceful, beautiful place, I think. I mean, it's one of on Vashon, and it's free.
Amazing.
And you can walk around the gardens and look and sit and meditate or visit or have lunch. And they're doing all kinds of things. Mukai Farm and Gardens.org. Look them up.
All right.
And I have to correct myself. I found out that the haiku thing ends this month.
Oh.
It will end April 24th. So you have to have your submission in by April 24th.
11 days, chop chop.
And then they'll be posted at Mukai on May 5th and on into the summer.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it's just an ongoing exhibit.
It's just a beautiful exhibit. I went up last year and it was so much fun. I just loved it. So all y'all Vashoners, get out there.
That's
going to be
fantastic.
Fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Or Seattle people, come on out. We'd love to see you.
Sort of talking about something a little bit international here.
Yeah.
With Mukai and the Japanese, and we'll segue right into travel.
I have plans. I may have to quarantine.
Yeah, where are you going?
Going to the UK and Croatia in July.
Ooh. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, is this your swim?
Two swims.
Yeah.
One got moved, so it's right on top of the other
one. Oh my goodness.
Are you swimming in Croatia?
In Croatia?
Oh, so that one's a fun one. But yeah, I'm doing a whole swim vacation through the islands, Croatian islands.
Oh, that's so good for you, Heidi. That'll be fabulous.
Which sea is that?
Adriatic, I think.
Yeah, the Adriatic Sea. I have been to Croatia and I have swum in that water.
Stop it.
It is soft. Everything about it is soft and warm. Even the rocks are soft.
In July.
It is a wonderful place to swim. You're going to love it.
I'm so excited.
Well, we had some comments from some listeners that want to hear some things
Come on.
That we crazy women have done in our past. And so I thought, well, you know, I had a particular request for travel stories because we've all traveled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that a little bit farther into what did we learn, how our culture's different, you know, more than... you know, the fabulous dinner you had out or the fancy hotel. Mm-hmm. Or that's not the point. The point is what I learned and where I went. And who wants to start?
I'll start. Can I talk about one? So I grew up in Coronado, California,
mm-hmm.
which is part of San Diego. It was a military town, sort of to start, and always a resort town also. Beautiful long beach there. But it's extremely insular and white and affluent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The affluent effluent.
It's not the effluent.
But when I was about 12 or so, maybe younger, I went with my father camping over the border. It wasn't that far away, guys. It was just Mexico. But I was absolutely floored by the abject poverty that's right there, just, you know, 8-9 miles away.
What did you see? You were a child then, right?
I saw other children at the border with those little cigarette girl style sling around your neck cases full of chiclets, hawking chiclets at the border. I was floored. There were lean-tos on the hillsides. Wow. There was a river full of poop. You know, it was not clean water. I was, and people without teeth. I sound so sheltered and so, I was so sheltered. And
well, you were a little girl, though.
I was young, but yeah. I just wanted to mention that because I was so floored by how, and even the traffic and the signs, like everything's cluttered and mm-hmm. the fuel smells different out of the exhaust of the vehicles. All of that was sensory overload. Don't ever send me to India. I think I would pass out from too much.
I have some India stories, actually.
Yeah. But for me, the takeaway, I mean, still very family oriented. I thought that was fabulous. Lots of crosses and rosaries everywhere. Mm-hmm. Lots of Catholicism. And
were you in Tijuana?
Yes.
Yeah.
And in Ensenada. Mm-hmm. And that just floored me. Just the poverty, but also happy, and they're just dealing with it. So resilience.
Beautiful people. I love the culture. I do.
It was just that was really shocking to me, though, just how, just right there, it's so different. And here we have this border crisis happening right now.
Right.
And people just want to cross so badly and have a better life. Anyway.
They just want to come here.
I would love to hear some of your stories. I'll tell more later.
Well, I have one. For, it was a few years ago, and well, quite a few years ago, actually. And a girlfriend and I went to Belize before Belize was Belize. You know,
What was it then?
Well, it was Belize, but it wasn't Americanized at that point, is what I mean.
Yeah.
And nobody'd really ever heard of it. It was for our 40th birthdays, and that was 1991. So now you know how old I am.
Okay.
But we went down, just the two girlfriends. We were friends since third grade. And
very cool.
Many, many things happened there. It was a fabulous trip. But one segment I want to talk about is, I've always been interested in history and culture and how does it work and what do you do? And so we met a guy through the people that we were staying with who was an ex-Navy intelligence officer during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And he was Belizean, but he was in the U.S. Navy. So he is a guide now for ruins and things like that. So we hired him to take us on this trip to Zunantunich, which is ruins at the time had just barely begun excavation. And so there was nobody there but archaeologists. And we had to take his old broken down car, on these roads that in America would not be roads. You know, and we were going
Sounds like Costa Rica.
through the jungle, up the hills. It was, you know, and he was fine. We were like, oh my God, where are we going? And the days before cell phones, nobody knew where we were. Nobody
were you
in the
being
world.
Kidnapped?
Yeah, are we being kidnapped? We don't know. Well, so anyway, we got to the ruins and Zunantunich at that time, I think it still is, believed to be one of the only matriarch societies in the Mayan culture. So many temples, and you could see where the outlines of different buildings, and we saw, I should tell you that the guide had made it his mission to translate all of the writings and everything, the carvings, because the Canadians and the British are the ones who did most of the excavating in Mexico and Belize. And they have all the artifacts. They took them back. And now they're sending people down there to do the same thing, but they're telling the stories wrong. They're misinterpreting the writings of on the slates and the steels.
Because no one speaks Maya.
I guess. Yeah, but he does, or he knows. And so anyway, he's doing that. And he took us around and he showed us where there was a sacrificial altar.
No way.
And then he sort of motioned over to this little place and he said that over there is where we think some of the monks, whatever you call them, I don't know what they were, the higher up religious elders lived and practiced. And he said, right there we know is a chapel of some kind of worship. And it was a little mound kind of thing. And you kind of had to go into it by bending way down. It was very short. And inside was a hole in one of the walls that at certain times of the year lines up with the sunrise and the sunset. And so it's a very sacred place. So my friend and I went in there and we, you know, it was dirty and awful, but you could tell where there used to be stones to sit on. And so we sat down and we're just listening to the birds are just coming in and out of that little hole, you know, flying in and coming out. And it was a bird I had never heard before.
Ooh.
And we were completely mesmerized. And we were sitting there and I said, you know, I've never seen birds hang upside down before.
Bat cave.
Right.
And my friend is
welcome
like
to the bat cave.
You know
no
how
way.
Some people have phobias? Well, her phobia is bats.
Oops.
And so there we were in this little tiny place, and it was sort of like Abbott and Costello because we were trying to get out of there so fast. We kept running into each other and banging each other. I still have scars on the top of my feet where I hit my feet on a huge boulder.
Oh my gosh.
Of all things, we had purses with us.
Oh, you silly.
And so our purses were in the way. It was terrible. Anyway, so we got out of there, and then on the way back, we're driving down in this old broken down Bronco down the old broken down road, and all of a sudden we stopped. We were in the back seat because that's how you have to do it. The driver sits in the front and the two women in the back. So he stopped. And so we looked out the window, and here are six soldiers in fatigues with machine guns.
Ooh,
they came out of the jungle and they're blocking the road. And he didn't say much to us. He just said, I'll talk to them. You sit still, don't speak, and don't make eye contact. So we're sitting there. And finally, that was during the Civil War in Guatemala. And finally he came back and he had paid them. And they were hungry. He said, they're just kids. They're hungry. They're looking for food.
Oh, I see.
You know,
so they're hustling.
Hustling. But they were soldiers. I mean, you know. So the cultural thing of a civil war in Guatemala was something I didn't even know about. And so then I did some study on that.
I bet.
And then when we got down to quote unquote civilized country, we stopped at a little roadside restaurant kind of thing. You would sort of call it a restaurant, to have a beer. And we had a Belican beer, which is Belizean beer.
It's oh, cool.
Very good. But what I saw was by the river, the women washing their clothes and the babies bathing in the water. And just up the stream a tiny bit, a man's car is in there and he's washing the car. And it's their, you'd say, river of life. And it is their river of life. They wash their clothes, they drink the water. I was kind of amazed that it's still like that. And the people were friendly, wonderful, beautiful people. I loved them. And I felt bad that there's that much work involved in everyday life.
Absolutely.
But then the best thing, well, not the best thing, but a very good thing that happened, we were leaving and there was a little old man sitting on the corner. And he said, asked me where I was going or something. And I told him very broken Spanish, broken English, back and forth, you know. And he said, do you want a Guatemalan engagement necklace? And I said, well, of course I do. So he held up this thing and I said, how much? And he told me it was some paltry sum, you know, so I bought it and I wore it today.
I love
it. Oh, that's your Guatemalan engagement.
And it's just got all
it
kinds
jingles.
Of little jingly icons. There's birds and there's
elephants,
you know, camels and bells and ribbons. And it's just,
are there elephants in Belize?
No.
It's up there by her collarbone, though. Yeah. I see one in there.
It's just all kinds of little trinkets. Anyway.
So cute.
So we were leaving, and I said adios to him. And he said in very broken English, don't forget, when you get back to America, you have a fiancé in Belize.
Oh. I bet he's got a lot of those.
He probably does. He sells these.
That's pretty.
So that's
his line, right?
That was a fabulous trip and a scary trip.
Oh,
and
God,
I learned so much. I'd like to go back to Zanatanich now and see what they've done. Because that's, you know,
that was a long time ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's one of the important things about travel outside your culture is that it's both scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes an adventure.
Right.
It's a little scary. It's a little fun. It's a little harrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get our lessons. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily from the easy, convenient, nice time in the hotel.
Well,
you're totally right.
The only other harrowing thing that happened on that trip was I almost got killed by a coconut.
By a coconut?
Yeah. If it would have hit me on the head, uh-huh. I would have been dead, I'm
really?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it hit me on the shoulder, and my shoulder was...
Oh,
it hurt.
Yeah.
But that was the only tragedy.
Susan, got a travel story?
Yeah. Well, you know, I spent some time in India when I was working for Underwriters Laboratories. And talk about a clash of cultures, because I was traveling as a rich American in these cities where poverty lives with luxury. Mm-hmm. And did I say that right? Luxury?
Luxury.
Perfectly
luxury.
Done.
Okay,
yeah, you did.
Thank
Good
you very
girl.
Much. So I can tell you a story about a time that I was in Bangalore, which is sort of the Bay Area of India.
Yeah.
And I was staying in this 5-star hotel. I had a suite next to, it was next to another one. It was like a duplex. Mm. And I had a valet who stayed outside my door waiting for my every wish.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
And so I was running at the time. Mm. And this was all set in a beautiful garden that was fenced in. And so I thought, oh, I'll get up and run in the garden in Bangalore. So I'm running and running and running, and I come upon this pack of 5 dogs. All look like Basenjis or a variation on that theme.
Okay.
And they were all huddled around something, but then they saw me.
Oh, dear.
And these were not cute little puppies.
Oh, no.
These were dogs that thought I was their next breakfast.
Oh, my goodness.
And so they turned on me and started coming
all
at me with gnashing teeth. 5 dogs.
Oh.
5 dogs coming at me with gnashing teeth. And I'm thinking, okay, I've got to be a bigger, scarier animal here. So I'm backing away from them going, and I keep backing and backing and backing until I get to my room, and these dogs are following me and yapping all the way.
Kidding me.
I get to my room and I can see the guy in the suite next to me with his door slightly open, and he sees me coming and closes it.
Jerk.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Thanks,
and
dude.
So I manage to get into my room and close the door. I'm okay. The dogs disappear. This was early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
About 9 o'clock, when things started coming to life, my valet, of course, was nowhere to be found during that time. 9 o'clock, my valet shows up, and I tell him the story. And I don't know if you've been to India, but there's a way that they shake their head that is both yes and no.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Kind of noncommittal.
She's sniveling. She looks like a bobblehead right now.
And so I told him the story, and he said, "Madam, that did not happen."
Oh!
And I went, yes, it did. Yes, it did. It did. No, madam, that did not happen.
What?
The garden is enclosed. That did not happen.
Oh,
wow.
So that was part of the clash of cultures. Number one, if we don't talk about it, it didn't happen. Number two, I'm a woman, even though I am the rich American. And I had that woman experience in India several times when I was by myself.
Wow.
In Delhi, at that time, I had red hair, reddish hair, and it was very curly. Mm-hmm. It was 120 degrees and humid, so I had a big red afro.
Yeah.
And I was this tall, white American woman with a big red afro, and I commissioned a rickshaw to take me around Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I paid him a year's salary, and he loved me.
Oh, wow.
But every time I stopped at a shop or something, the guy in there would invite me to dinner.
Oh.
Because all American women are sluts.
Yeah.
So that was one.
It's
that
the
was
word.
One. And but when I was traveling with the men who were working for me, I was fine, but they got all the attention first. They got their luggage taken care of first. They were attended to first.
Wow.
The upside of the visit to India was that in Delhi, I got a sari. Beautiful sari. And there were women there who were working with the PR agency that we were working with, and they dressed me in this sari. They wrapped this thing around me several times, pinned it with all the right pins, and that thing lasted till 2 o'clock in the morning when I was dancing my brains out with wonderful, sincere, lovely English Indian young men. But that sari stayed on.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkably, that was incredible.
How fun.
I love that.
That
How
was,
fun.
Yeah, the clash of cultures. And the last story I'll tell is in Mumbai, where they boast the world's largest slum. When you fly into Mumbai, you see tar paper roofs for for miles and miles, as far as you can see. In these places where when they have the monsoon season, babies get washed away.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So we were touring... I don't remember. It was a museum or something, but we were outdoors, and there were some beggars there, and I gave one of them some money, and I was immediately swarmed.
I'm sure.
To the point that I could not really walk. Uh-oh. But I never felt endangered in any way. And I walked with these people, and I don't even remember how that particular part ended.
Wow.
But we were later in a car with a driver, myself and the PR agent from the United States who'd mm-hmm. been riding with me. And we got stuck in a traffic jam. We were sitting with the car windows open, and a beggar woman handed her baby into the back seat of the car to me. And of course, I burst into tears, and he's saying to me, "You can't take this child. It will be an international incident. You cannot keep this child."
That is a travel story.
That is a travel story. So I handed the baby back out to her mama.
Yeah.
But
oh my gosh,
that is India, the class of cultures. I mean, there was so much incredible beauty being on the streets in Delhi, which is kind of a dusty old government town. The women, when they would gather on a corner, look like beautiful birds in all the different colors of their saris and their punjabs and the beautiful clothes that they wore just colored the whole place.
How
with
fabulous.
Beauty and vitality.
Yeah.
And the people, once again, were wonderful.
Your story about the woman handing you her baby reminds me so much of what women in Guatemala and El Salvador now are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, the freedom and the life they want to give their children, they're willing to give up their children so they'll be better. Mm. I just can't fathom it.
We're not trying to be Debbie Downers. It's true. Even when we were in Costa Rica, David and I were driving down pretty far up Guanacaste, and on our way through this dusty, bumpy, crater road, there was a woman with a small child, and we picked her up, and she needed a ride. And David spoke enough Spanish. She came with us for quite a bit. And she, by the end of it, was asking for money needed help, and she was thirsty, and we were handing, you know, juices back there. And we were pretty close to our destination, and we let her out slowly, and I felt really bad. And so I took the platinum ring I had from my first marriage, it's my wedding band, and I just handed it to her and said, "Es platinum." And
it's
sent
a good
her
use
on
of
her
it.
Way.
It
was.
A great
I,
use felt, of it.
I had no problems.
Well, like, right.
Cash that puppy in and get some money. Platinum's worth a lot of money. So,
You know, talking about the women and how the men get served first and that kind of thing in India. Well, there was a little bit of that in Belize, in that the place that we stayed, unbeknownst to me, was owned by four women from Portland, Oregon, which is where I lived. And they, two couples had gone down, bought this old falling down property, and they were refurbishing it themselves. It's a fabulous story. It's a story for another day. But anyway, they said one of the biggest problems they had, it was on Ambergris Key. So you have to take a boat to get there. You can't just drive. So, or a float plane. So, they had to take their boat into Belize City to get lumber and nails and hammers and all that. And one of them told me it was very, very hard to buy that because the men didn't want to sell that stuff to women because that's not women's stuff.
Really?
And so, and so then finally they got the men at the hardware store or the lumber store or whatever to understand that they were four women. Their partners were building. One's an electrician, we can do this. And they finally got them convinced. And then they said, "Okay, everything's fine. We'll load it on the boat for you, and this is good." And she looked at him, and he looked at her and said, "But who will drive the boat? You can't drive the boat."
Love it.
I can build the house, but I can't drive the boat.
You can't drive the boat because you're a woman.
Yeah. You know? Are we doing underwriters again?
I'm slightly tardy for underwriters.
Oh, dear.
Here we go.
Bash On Programming is brought to you by PSCCU. Proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union, practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
All right, guys. So we've traveled a little bit And now we're going to do a little traveling around the Astros.
Oh, that's a good segue.
A
little bit about the stars. Well, here's the thing. I know nothing about the stars. I know that I'm an Aquarius.
Okay.
I know that I have something rising and something ascending, something descending. And I know that you two really do know astrology and rely on it. And so I just would like to turn it over to you and tell me what you know about astrology or why it sings to you.
I'm going to turn it over to Susan because I would love you to explain. I'm born in this time, so that means is that my sun, and what does that mean?
Yeah, what
versus
is
the
that?
Moon versus the rising?
Okay, well, your sun sign is the sign that was dominant at the moment in the location where you were born.
Okay.
Which is what makes an astrological chart unique, because it's all about that moment, that location, that time.
Mm-hmm. Get your chart done. You need to know the city and the time and the date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, your exact time of birth.
Okay.
So that's your sun sign. Your ascendant is the planet that was rising at the time. And your sun sign is sort of your basic personality structure, if you will.
Okay.
Your ascendant is the face that you show to the world.
Aha.
So, oh. Heidi, what's your sun sign?
Capricorn.
So Capricorn is practical. And
steady Eddie, competitive.
Steady and self-reliant. And what's your rising sign?
Aries. It's another power sign.
Aries is very powerful, but it's also fire.
Yes.
So Capricorn is earth mm-hmm. and Aries is fire.
Yeah.
So that makes you pretty damn powerful.
And Leo is the other one.
Is that your moon?
Yes.
So the moon, and I'm trying to, moon is your emotions.
Oh God.
So Leos are kind of dramatic.
Kind of showy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Performer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, all right.
So what about you, Linda?
Okay, so I am Aquarius.
Yeah. That's your sun sign.
And my moon is in Libra.
Okay, that's your emotions.
And what else? Ascendant?
Ascendant.
Gemini.
Gemini.
What
okay.
What does that mean?
Well, both Gemini and Libra are air signs. Air. So well,
ooh,
so
and
is Aquarius, for that matter.
You're just
so I'm an airhead.
Fairy, yeah, you're an airhead.
Ethereal, Linda.
Oh, that one.
Aquarius is very inventive, creative, and forward-thinking. Tend to be progressive, liberal. Libra is very emotional. They're always seeking balance, having trouble finding it, and Gemini is the twins. So, and Gemini is where? Is that your
ascendant?
Your ascendant. So that's the face you show to the world. Gemini is quick intelligence, quickly intellectual, very smart, but can also be two-faced.
Oh.
So you
so
know,
watch
you
out.
Might be, yeah, you might be. I don't know where the cooking thing comes in. That's something else. That would be more like a Cancer or homebody kind of thing.
Habit, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. About you, Susan, who are you astrologically?
Astrologically, my sun sign is Leo. My ascendant is Aquarius. Mm-hmm. And my moon is Libra.
So you're a little bit of both of us.
Yeah, yeah, I am. Yeah. I think what that does is make me a leader who has a hard time making a decision.
Oh, that's good too.
Hmm.
Do you
humanitarian? The Aquarian thing is very humanitarian.
That doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like it.
Do you run your life? Do you consult with the stars when you want to make a decision, or you have something on your mind?
No. I check my horoscope every day for mm-hmm. fun to see, actually kind of test the science, if you will, of astrology how true is it. Or, and sometimes it's great to check what was yesterday's horoscope. But you know, they can be, there are not just 12 different personality types in the universe. So yeah, I check that, and I've had my chart done.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I kind of throw that up against the wall and see what sticks.
The noodle test.
Yeah, because I am a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
I find astrology really works. I look at other people. I try to get a bead for one person's sign, so it gives me an idea of what to expect from them.
Mm-hmm. See, that I wonder that if you really rely on that.
It's more sort of cross-check, sounds like.
Yeah, you know, there's so many pieces of information to get about other humans.
Right.
Their astrological sign is just one.
Well, folks.
Well, kids.
Check your horoscope.
Check your horoscope. Put your mask on. Check us back in 2 weeks.
You're listening to KVSHLP.
Thank you so much for listening.
And this has been The Clatch.
Bye-bye.